Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of By the Numbers, the quintessential Counter-Strike podcast. I am your host, Richard Lewis. My co-host is Duncan Thorin Shields, fresh from Vietnam, had a nice holiday, so naturally he's going to be calm, chilled out, relaxed, not going to be upset with anybody. Yeah?
All good? I had a fine time, mate. Better than the Americans.
Yeah, glad to hear it.
Like every day I would get up about 5 minutes to six. I would go out and watch the sunrise. I'd look out across that flat horizontal plane as that sun came up and shone down across me. And I'd go, it's just flat as fuck this, isn't it? Couldn't even be a glow. I'd just go on my day. Have my breakfast, go on my day. Gotta start straight up.
Banger. Right, anyway, look, man, there's lots to talk about. Even though we haven't had a tournament per se, because I'm not really interested in WESG, I'm not going to lie to you. We'll talk about WESG. Yeah, we'll talk about WESG. But let's start with some news and just some little bits and pieces that have been going on kind of in the background. Now, I've been streaming this week, Duncan. By the way, I don't know why you don't. That seems to me, for a man who loves money, you are leaving vast amounts of cash on the table by not firing up a Twitch stream.
You and just stuff from doing a stream. I don't know what the numbers are even like, mate.
Well, because I'm transparent, right? And I don't give a fuck about that. So I stream irregularly. I'm trying to do more of it. But obviously I've got a loyal fan base, 44,000 Twitch followers. You know, not amazing numbers, but they're all hardcore and engaged. And you know, I think we're up to 666
we are right now, mate.
666 subs.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, right. And on top of that, like, I just looked at it in February, I had $1,500 of donations. So
that's large, right?
Yeah, and Sam got none of it. This is news to him. I think people would pay to watch you play Counter-Strike badly alone.
Probably, yeah.
So just saying, mate, you should be firing up the Quattro and get on Twitch. So anyway, I was streaming, Duncan, and this actually happened while I was streaming, and my reaction probably said it all. But Fnatic announced that despite winning,
yeah, it's good, isn't it? This is a fucking,
oh mate,
this
what
is
a way to start.
Close in a nutshell. So come on, hit me with it.
Yeah. Oh, I can't.
I'll pretend I've heard the news. All right, yeah. Fnatic, yeah.
Well, Fnatic just won that IEM Katowice, Duncan. They beat FaZe in the final. Really big upset. Crims playing incredibly well. Flusher back to his vintage
best. Team on the rise, you'd say, yeah. I can't wait to see the next tournament.
Well, exactly, right? Where could they possibly go from here? So imagine my shock, Paul Joseph Watson reference, when they announced that they are dropping their in-game leader, who has been... it was been instrumental in revolutionizing.
No, hold off, guys. Don't react too soon. Maybe they're getting fucking glaive, or maybe this is where Shox is going. Maybe, there's a lot that could go on. Let's see where this is going.
Yeah,
dropping. If you want an upgrade, who are you getting? Who's on the table?
Well, so obviously there was lots of names they could have got. They decided to go with the ex-NIP player and in-game leader, Exist, who will be resuming in-game leadership duties at Fnatic.
Is this Back to the Future 4 and they're going back to 2012 to play with this kind of... What does that even mean? Even NIP was like, you know what? We love you as a brother. In fact, actually, you gave some of your blood and a liver to Forrest, but you're still out because you're fucking shit, aren't you? So see ya. And on the way out, obviously, presumably, he just... Here's what I don't understand as well. This is the guy who's so famous for not being an actual in-game leader.
Yeah, no. this is what's so crazy about it to me, right? Yeah. So I remember, when E-League rolled around and quite famously Golden's flight got delayed because of weather conditions and he literally flew in that morning, got straight off a plane, jet lagged to fuck, fought through Atlanta traffic and went straight into a server, straight into a best of one for Fnatic, which they won. And he did an interview afterwards and he had eyes like piss holes in the snow. He was absolutely fucking exhausted. And during that event, you know, there was lots of interviewers there, as there always is at E-League, and they were talking to the players. They're talking to these legends, some of the most decorated players in the game, Flusher, Crims, JW, and they're going, yo, this fucking in-game leader you got, sure, he likes to bleed for the cause, but do you have faith in him as an in-game leader because he came from your academy team? And those players were going, listen, we don't give a fuck about any of that. He doesn't need to be nervous with us. He's the kid who's going to tell us how to play. And sure, he might not be as experienced as us, but we completely give him everything. He is the leader, and we will do whatever he tells us to do. And the system seemed to be working. They were on this like upward trajectory. Star Ladder, certainly an aberration, going 0-3. But if you look at the way they were trending, that blip aside and a couple of others, maybe you say the major wasn't great. You know, it was generally on an upswing. And then you culminate your peak by winning a tournament, and then they immediately backstab this junior in-game leader who they all supposedly had this amazing confidence in. And the proof of concept was there because they won a tournament. And he's out, and you're replacing him with an in-game leader that has really struggled to even grasp map vetoing as a concept. So the only thing I can think of, Duncan, is Golden must be straight doing something fucking heinous outside of the server. He must have like some unbelievable toxic personality that has never revealed itself, because there is no good reason to make this move, in my mind.
Right, here's the sad thing. I'll give you two versions. One is going to be the stupid joke version. Okay, so the joke version would be that, if you remember, one of the reasons I gave as to why I thought teams like Virtus Pro, like NIP, held on to those original cores for way too long is because when a player like a Freiburg leaves, none of your rivals go and pick him up, because they go, why the fuck would I pick him? He's terrible. I was waiting for you to kick him. So presumably, I actually am now the Donald Trump of esports. And the fact that I've said, you know, Fnatic's not in a rush to pick up Exist. They're like, hold my fucking, I don't know, they're drinking Sweden. Yeah. This is the way, actually, sadly, I actually don't agree with that. If I had to guess, I bet Golden's done nothing wrong. What I actually think in this scenario is, this is why I get so tilted by the notion that, like, pro players are in any way analysts or, like, can analyze the game. Pro players tend to know how they themselves play better than anyone, and to some degree, keyword to some degree, how their own team plays and perhaps should play. But you wouldn't believe, I'm not saying you, obviously, I'm talking about like the general public, people would not believe how far out of whack some pro players' opinions are on their own team. Like, I've been with teams, right, where they have some, like, you know, legendary in-game leader who's fucking amazing, and then there'll be some star player in the team who doesn't really have a role that's, like, super involved with the strats. So maybe to him, the strats are a secondary thing that's going on over here. And he'll literally just be going off at after parties. He'll be like, yeah, it's pretty much all me, you know. Whenever I have a game and I'm going off, you know, I could probably just play with anyone. I mean, actually, you know what? Sometimes I've thought, you know, I've heard them say things like this. You probably heard them say, you know what? I've sometimes just thought, imagine if I could just have a team of five people like me. Imagine if it was just me five times. And every single person who's ever said that, by the way, you just look at them like, they couldn't even handle two of you in a team, you fucking moron. Like, you might have mad skills, but you also maybe have some, like, mad character flaw, or maybe you don't have, you know, don't know the concept of teamwork because you're a superstar player. There's all reasons why that doesn't make any sense. But the difference is, that's fine as just an ill-informed opinion that some stupid player has, as long as he then does keep his mouth shut and actually play in the team. But sadly, you will see bizarre moves like this every now and then, because pro players have, like, a very weird concept of each other, especially if they haven't analysed the game much. So, for example, I know everyone to this day is still like, why did Sean Gaze play with Shazam for all that time in Echo Fox? Like, why Shazam, you know? Because you watch him in-game and you go, yeah, decent player, but, you know, why would that be, like, the obsession where you have to play with Shazam? He's, like, a package deal. Well, I can tell you why. From my own experience of knowing players, first of all, they don't tend to, like, examine the game and go back over what each of them is doing and try and figure out. What they tend to do is go off their own, like, literally their subjective life experience of what happened in the moment and your faulty memory. So, for example, there's been some famous examples I can think of in history of players who actually weren't that good. Like, you know, they were maybe, like, very inconsistent with form. Like, they'd have a game, maybe every five games they have a good one. So Shazam's probably not a bad shout for this one. But because to their teammates, the teammate would always remember the godlike 1v3 they pulled off, or that one half where, you know, nothing was going right and that guy just carried the game. And in their brain, they would just keep repeating, like, nah, you don't understand though, right? You know, that guy can just take over whole games. And I think the best example I've ever seen of this, I'll just straight up say it, is like, there was a famous team in 1.6. I won't say who it is, but they were a very, very good team. And I was once discussing with one of them, like, their map veto and saying, oh, you should probably stay away from this map against that opponent. You know, it just doesn't go that well. And then they were telling me, nah, actually, every time we play that, it's like a 50-50. And I was like, well, I can pull up the stats. You know, you've won one out of the last 7 times. And, you know, most times they were winning by like 8 round margin. And they go, nah, but that doesn't really work like that. You know, actually, every time we play them, it's sort of a 50-50. And I kept going, are you talking about in practice or something? He goes, no, in the server, you know, every time I'm playing, it's a close game. And I can tell, and I go, but it's not a close game. I'm showing you again, 8 round differential. And they're going, no, but look, we had that 116-14 and the other time. And they start going into that world of like, you know, if we'd have won the second pistol, then I don't think they would have gotten their gun round rolling. Like, the point I'm getting into here is, if you think that way and you don't ever examine the game, maybe to you, you just remember all the times Exist won against you, or you remember all the times you thought, oh, he had a good performance there or something. Then you got to throw in, I'm just going to go straight ahead and say, Joe W and Flusher have some of the worst instincts in terms of like who to get as teammates I think I've ever seen of players who've accomplished as much as they have. Remember, they have won the most majors in the history of the game. You'd normally think that sort of player would always make the right choices to who he surrounds himself with. Because if you're not the superstar player, let's face it, they weren't like, you know, like Joe W definitely wasn't the best player in those teams. You normally assume, right, those guys tend to make their careers by picking the right person to align themselves with, you know, like, think of NBK. You make the exact right move as to when to go to the different in-game leader when the meta switches. Then you make the right move as to switch star player so that you keep on the right side of it, but then the other guy goes off. He has to recover for a year, but you keep getting all the trophies. They haven't done that. Like, you look at the last few years, people forget this. There's two details you need to know about these two guys, Flusher and JW. One is that JW wanted to leave Fnatic and join NIP before Fnatic won their second ever major. So the first major they won with Olofmeister, his plan would have been to be gone already and to be in NIP, who was, yeah, still a very good team, but, you know, it was clear that Fnatic was the better team. Now, his reasoning, presumably things like maybe he could have had a more starring role, maybe he thought they were legendary players. Again, maybe it was imprinted in his brain. It's Forrest and Get Right. How can you not want to play with them? Then you go to Flusher. People forget this. During the time when Fnatic was winning all those championships, because the bizarre thing about the Fnatic team was, I actually think they were at their best in like the middle of that timeline's that team's period together with Pornax, which actually was when they had like good results, but they also had ones that, you know, they lost that major to LDLC with the boost shit, and then they lost that match to NIP at MLG. So they had some times they lost, so it looked like, wow, they're at their best. And then they actually won most of their championships, like sort of on the way out, on the back end of the few months, where they won them all, if you remember, with sort of like, it was almost like veteran savvy. You know, they'd always be like down in a match, or they'd be against an opponent who could beat them, but they'd pull through and the other opponent would lose the close game or the 16-14. And so during that whole period when they were starting to lose, that was where they started making those weird moves, like, oh, Flusher's the in-game leader now. And I remember, this was DreamHack Tours this happened at. They were like, right, Flusher's the in-game leader, he's taken over, Pronax needs a break. And then before the final had even happened at that tournament, they were like, oh, Pronax is back as in-game leader now. Flusher's decided he doesn't want to do it. And this basically has happened multiple times. So my point is, these are some fantastic players, depending on what area you're talking about. But their sense for how the game is and what players they want to play with don't have any relation to analytics, basically. Like, as far as I can tell, most players go on things like, in my brain, do I think this guy's really good? And then secondly, and unfortunately, this is a killer if you're outside of the team, because you can never know if there's anything to it. It's like, what do I think this guy would be like to play with? So, for example, if I had to guess on the Sean Gares one, I bet Shazam probably does everything that Sean Gares wants in the game. So to him, he's like, right, cool. That's
and out of the game.
Exactly, yeah. We left that one there. So he probably thinks, right, he's taken care of. Now I just have to worry about these other guys, you know. Yeah, this is the problem.
But look, is there a world where this move is potentially good? Because one thing I will say is, like, Exist, the when he's a player and not really sort of shackled with in-game leadership duties, I think he's a really solid player. I mean, his stats haven't reflected that towards the end of his NIP tenure. Like, after Freiburg went, he was always the next one on the chopping block. That's the nature of the beast. Those younger guys really came through and sort of exposed Exist to a certain degree. But obviously, when you're an IGL, you always get a certain amount of leeway for poor statistical performances because you're meant to be, you know, controlling all the parts, and it must be very hard to sort of divide your brain up as a resource into making sure a strat is executed, calling stuff on the fly, and also concentrating on the minutia that's happening on your screen so you can put yourself in a position to get lots of kills. We all understand and appreciate that. So is there a world where, because I think he is a better technical player than Golden, is there a world where this could somehow be a improvement and actually exists deficiencies as an in-game leader are sort of compensated for by the fact that he can probably click a few more heads when it comes to what's happening on the server?
Like, the big concern for me is, as a player, yeah, I could see that. I actually do think he probably would be a better fragger than Golden. Like, Golden did really seem to me. I know in that final, especially on that last map against FaZe, he was having some really good frags. But
oh, yeah, sure.
He does generally look like a pretty extreme example of, like, the in-game leader, where, like, you just have him for the in-game leader and they don't really do fuck all in terms of fragging. But that's the point. If the effect is enough, then it's worth balancing that out. Yeah. So the problem I have with this is, I did think that part of the reason why I didn't expect this Fnatic team to win more championships is I think they actually did lack a bit of firepower. Like, Flusher going ham like that hasn't happened for the last few months. So basically, imagine the same team, but without Flusher doing that. Yeah, they'd have probably gone out in the semis or made the top six. You know, they'd have been good, but they wouldn't have won the tournament. So the problem is, do I want more fragging power? Yes. But to take away whatever they were doing with leadership, I have to figure that was part of why it was working so well. I mean, you look at the pieces they had in that team. That's a team where when they announced that lineup, it really had no business being a team that could ever have won a big championship like this. Like you look at it, like, Flusher was not in great form. JW was in terrible form. Crims was okay, but not as good as he is now. Lecro, as always, because he's been in, like, lesser teams in the past and only had that brief period in the Fnatic where they had no real in-game leader. He's been a guy who's just been, like, bouncing around, hasn't found his place, hasn't found a team that could support him or whatever. So there was no logical part in the team where you were like, right, this could be a world championship level team, you know, a team that could go deep at majors and win big trophies. So I have to at least assume some of that's got to be with what they've done with Golden, and then tying into what you were saying there, the idea that the veterans actually basically handed in the keys and were like, right, you're driving this now, you decide how it goes. And what do you know, as soon as they did that, literally they were like a team that had tournament to tournament growth. Every tournament you saw something more of them, you saw, like, more consistency. They only had the one blip ever, which, like, sadly I could definitely guess that blip might have been when all this shit started, because that was around the time I think Exist left. So sadly, knowing teams, I've known so many teams in history who behind the scenes, they already had a roster move planned. And believe it or not, that can actually make a team play looser and just go, fuck it. Right? Who cares what
we call that the old French special, don't we?
It's mad, isn't it? Like, the number of times that you'll hear a team where they were like, yeah, we were losing every scrim, or, you know, we were going to kick him anyway. And then, or even worse, the whole team was going to be dead. And then they were, and as a result, when they go into that tournament, they go, ah, whatever happens, happens. And believe it or not, it can be quite freeing. Obviously, you can't replicate the feeling, though, because it's a one tournament thing. So sadly, I would have to speculate that presumably the Star Series thing really shook him to the core.
And look, I got to ask as well, you know, what now for Golden? I made a joke on my stream where it was like I just brought up the page for Godsent and played that because, like, that just seems to be where all the Swedish cast-offs end up, and it's a fate worse than death. I don't know why Twist is there. Like, so fucking supremely talented a player just kind of, you know, with all the other guys who were meant to be big upcoming stars, you know, you got Disco over there, fucking Freddie B, like, you know, like, these guys were touted to do things and be that next second, you know, that next generation of Swedish talent. Now you're on a Godsent roster that does fuck all. Recent results over Na'Vi, notwithstanding, which we'll get into. You know, I hope that doesn't happen to him. But honestly, how high is his stock? People might just look at this as an aberration, the one-off tournament win. You generally gauge in-game leaders based on prolonged results and repeatedly doing it. You know, that's why Sean Gares is, even though he may not have many trophies in the cabinet, he's got a proven long history of going to teams, making them better, making them competitive, molding players, putting in systems. And even if they don't win trophies, you always see an improvement. So Sean Gares is always going to be a desirable IGL to have. Unfortunately, Fnatic have cut short Golden's time to build a brand and build a reputation. So where does he go from here?
So what you're saying is Fnatic's cut short his Golden time. I guess he must have been a naughty Scottish schoolboy. reference is fucking fire. Sadly, be lost on all my audience. So
yeah, absolutely, but definitely you can use that title for the inevitable video that's going to come where you're talking to a fucking puppet or whatever you do these days.
Why not?
So, where does he go, brother?
That's the big problem, because again, whenever you try to rank that, you have to figure by politics, like who would want to have him, etc. Like, first of all, sadly, with the state of how Counter-Strike is, I would assume he probably only has Swedish teams to pick from. We're not in a world, especially with that. Like, here's what's bizarre. I actually feel, in a sense, like, yes, FaZe did prove that you could do that concept of like star players from different countries and it can work. But what's funny is FaZe has done it, and they're probably the most extreme example ever. And even they don't win all the tournaments. Then you look at the other teams that have done it, the Mouse Sports of the world, the few of them are Optic, etc. Even their results have been spotty. So it does work, but that's not like that's like the new way to recruit. So sadly, most of those teams, part of how they work is they are just star teams. They're like, right, we've got all these good players, and if we just all go ham in a game, maybe we win. So sadly, those teams probably aren't in the market for an in-game leader, believe it or not. I don't think many of them care or want one in that sense. So probably doesn't have any options beyond Swedish teams. I have to say, the stupidest part about this is, I'm not exaggerating, if I was NIP, I would recruit this guy now. I'd say, let's just accelerate what should be an obvious fucking Virtus Pro type life cycle, which is that you can't just keep these players forever. Let's just pick someone, whoever it might be, and let's get him out, and let's get Golden in there, and let's actually have a real team.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting to me, that why not even like just put Exist on the bench and he's just there, and it's like, right, if any of your, even if the plan is to drop Golden all along, you go, any of your back up now, we've got a tailor-made star replacement come in, big reputation, he's going to replace you, and he can in-game lead as well, kind of, right? Like, you know, that should be, you light a fire under, you know, people, because I said it, I love Jesper, but he hasn't been JW for what, 2.5 years, 3 years? Like, how far back do we need to go really to talk about an impactful JW? He's treading water as a player and has been for a long time. And yet always seems to skate whenever roster changes are being made. Always manages to keep it with the homies. Always got two big players.
Which shows how politics works, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like, but you know, I did just think like you could do it that way. And the worst part about it is, this has happened while they're at WESG. There's conceivably a world, because don't forget, Fnatic have not issued a press release yet. There's conceivably, this is by Nell, which to me, he's like the French DK. So if he reports it, I believe it's mustard. I believe it's a solid report. That's why I'm talking about it, matter of a fact, even though the organization hasn't confirmed it. But they've gone to WESG. There's conceivably a world where maybe Golden found out this way.
Oh, and also, while at a tournament, they could fucking win.
Yeah, remember, 800 grand tournament.
First place is 800K. Second place is $300,000. That's more than second place at a major. I think second place at a major is 250K, right? Yeah. So what's mad about this is, yeah, you absolutely could win two tournaments back-to-back and then kick the guy. And if not kick the guy, if you know anything about how roster moves work, both in teams and in general sports, if you the worst thing you can ever do is do the whole thing where it's like the player knows you were going to kick him and then you don't and you keep him, enjoy that fucking resentment for the rest of all time. Even if it doesn't instantly blow up, it's always waiting there, isn't it? The guy, any moment he wants to, he can just pull that out and go, well, fuck you. What about the time you tried to trade me? You know, you've ruined the whole team morale in that sense. So, yeah, unfortunately, this is just what players are like. Like, here's the other thing that sickens me about this, right? This is how deluded those NIP players were. Is I've seen this now. I don't think Exist said it, admittedly. I don't think he's done many interviews. But when people like a Freiburg or a Taz or whoever it might be leaves a massive team, right? The real reason they leave is they already outstayed their welcome. They were already living on borrowed time from the past, basically getting the salary today for what they did yesterday. But what's sad is, because none of them in their teams generally rag on these guys and like, you're fucking letting the team down, you shit. And then when they get kicked, basically tell them to their face, by the way, you just literally aren't good enough for us anymore. We have to move on. They always even kick them like, oh, we really hate to do this, but you know, business is business. And you know, and they always try to like make soft sell, like give them the golden handshake on the way out, right? Good name for also a good name for the video there. Good in the golden handshake on the way out, right? That as a result, these motherfuckers are delusional. So you'll see interviews where people ask them like, so are you going to retire? Are you going to keep playing? You know what they always say? I would play again if the offer was a really good one from a top team. Why the fuck would you be getting an offer from a top team? What have you done that would make that be worthwhile? So you know the sickest thing is, someone's actually done that for Exist. He hasn't gone elsewhere and shown he's super sick, playing in a lesser team, worked his way up, or perhaps, by the way, even being an in-game leader in another team and shown us, you know what, maybe Forest and Getright were part of the problem. They didn't want to do certain things I wanted as an in-game leader. Hasn't done anything to prove his worth, and he's instantly going to now waltz into a top team just because a few members of the team are fucking idiots and just base things on who they like as a person, I would assume. Yeah.
Just as a final point on this, there is a long-term danger to this that people probably aren't really cognizant of in the moment. You know, I saw what happened to the UK scene in Counter-Strike Source when it was recycling all its top-tier talent repeatedly. You had two teams of basically various mix-ups of 12 to 14 players, and there was groups that wouldn't play with the other group, and you would just cycle in these two top tier teams, and they had access to all the sponsorships. And every time a new kid came on the scene, they were like, he's probably cheating, he's an onliner, what lands has he been to? Well, you can't get to a land because you're the cunts with the sponsorship, so none of the talent comes through. And then we're all sat here scratching our heads, whatever happened to UKCS? I'll tell you what happened. It's the same 30-year-old motherfuckers trying to get teams together going, yeah, this is the one this time. I couldn't do it in 2008, but I got a good feeling about 2008, like, fucking give me strength. And this has happened in a bunch of scenes. You know, it was happening in NA. You know, there's a tragic element to the iBuyPower story and an unfair element to the iBuyPower story. But in terms of shaking up the power structure at the top of NACS and giving a few sort of gaps for, like, new talent and people with new ideas to come through and try things, it probably has helped a lot of people get their start, and a lot of people with attitudes that were willing to take a punt on undiscovered talent. It probably did help the NA scene get to where it is today, whether people want to accept that or not. Because if not, we'd probably still be recycling DAZE teams, Steel teams. You know, I'm not saying it's a good thing what happened, but I'm just saying even shit things can have positives, right? So Sweden, we've been talking, like, where are all the Swedish teams at? Where's all this upcoming Swedish talent at? And now, what, we're recycling Exist over a younger, up-and-coming in-game leader. It's bonkers to me. And I think Swedish CS is going to suffer if players don't start kind of opening their eyes and, like, being a bit more proactive in terms of what they want on a roster. Like, NIP have been very good. They had some of the hardest cuts to make because you're not cutting players. You're cutting legends with huge brands that are a big part of your following, a big part of your revenue stream because of the merchandising. But fair play to the NIP CEO. He didn't give a fuck. No sentimentality these days. Away you go. Let's bring some young motherfuckers in. And that's why it's almost like I wanted NIP to be more successful than they were, because I appreciate the difficult cuts, the difficult choices. This Fnatic move, it just feels so fucking regressive to me.
Well, what's sad as well is this is like the fucking godsend swap all over again. What are JW and Flusher thinking? Like, that was what was so telling about that move, if everyone remembers, in like latter 2016. Because at the time, that was when that Epsilon team was coming up, and they had a bunch of players that you could have done something with. And instead, what you had was, they literally just said, I remember Pronax and Schneider, let's just go play with them again, shall we? It's like, why would winding the clock back to a team which had already run its course years before be a suitable solution to 2016, going into 2017 Counter-Strike at that point in time? It isn't, is it? This is why, and this is one of the reasons why, actually, I mean, I guess in a sense, it's why Counter-Strike will always be interesting, is because first of all, it's obviously impossible to already perfect all the maps and every style of play anyway. But one of the aspects that actually means Counter-Strike has its own, like, meta game that's, like, different to some other games like League of Legends, is that you can have these roster swaps a lot more often because of the fact that players have so much power over the roster swaps. I mean, aside from Dota, I can't think of any game that's even comparable, because in games like League of Legends, like Overwatch, it's actually become more and more the case over the years that the players can sometimes have fuck all to do with it. Like, nowadays, the idea of player input in those games to a roster move is like, I've got these three players I am going to sign one of. Who would you like to vote for? And maybe I will take on board. And sometimes they don't even do that. Some of them even do what an actual sports GM would do, which is like, guess what? I'm signing this guy. guy. And whether you like him or not, we're going to be working with him. This is your job. That doesn't exist in Counter-Strike. So, I mean, it's funny that also, I don't know if we're going to address this on the top, but I saw today, yesterday maybe, there was some news where Scoots was in the news again about like the Player Association or whatever.
Yeah,
and I know that that's still back on the radar. Well, the funny thing about that is Counter-Strike has got to be the game where the players are far and away the most power I can think of in any game. Like, they've fucking run everything.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Now, look, I want to move on, so we'll get on to the next topic. Let's talk about WESG. There's lots of sort of drama that's coming out. So this is a big tournament in China, and it's got a twist to it. If people haven't followed it or don't know what it is, you would be forgiven. It's not what you would consider a top-tier tournament because of the twist, and that is that it is national teams. You must all have the same nationality to enter into this competition and represent. You don't even represent the country. You're not called France when you play. Like, you're still envious, you know. But so it's a bit strange to me. I never understood what WESG were trying to go for with that angle. Like, if you want to make it a World Cup, we've had those before. You know, Clanbase used to do the Euro Cup. We've certainly had other international tournaments of that nature in Counter-Strike history. But I don't really know what this is going for here. So I think concept-wise, it's always been a bit of a mess to me. It's why I never really follow it. Plus, it always, because of the difficulties of getting to China and getting Chinese visas and all of the other issues that come with China, it's not a tournament that can guarantee all the top teams can go or top teams will even want to go. This time around, it's been probably the best attended it's ever been. And they've always tried to sweeten the pot by offering mad amounts of money within the context of what the tournament is and the current landscape for CS tournaments. So anyway, we'll start just by talking about first up what happened with the fucking hotels. Players get out there. I've got a tweet here from Scream. I've stayed in some fucking shonky hotels like down the years, pretty bad living conditions. But yeah, let me just get you this tweet, Sam.
I got it.
Ready. Oh, you got it, right? Yeah, just bring that up, mate. You can just play it. I'm sure Duncan's seen it. So, obviously, this place that they ended up in was, like, literally fucking falling apart. There was photos of fucking cockroaches shooting out of taps when they were turned on. Just really awful conditions, like, just unacceptable for any sort of tournament to go in. And I wanted to kind of offer a nuanced perspective on it because I know everyone might be chewing up WESG. I've got no affiliation to them, never worked an event, never took a paycheck, barely know the people who are involved in it. And I usually do come down on tournament organizers incredibly difficult, incredibly harshly, I should say, rather, when they find themselves in circumstances like this. But I've got to say, it is difficult because what apparently happened, Duncan, was that they did have a nice luxury hotel all set up and they just turned around and went, nah, actually, fuck it, we're full at the last minute. So they had to hustle hard to sort of find a hotel for the players. And they were only stuck in there for a day or two and they did sort of correct the situation. Not a lot of people are probably aware. Like, when you organize tournaments in China and places like this, I've heard stories of people have booked a hotel, got to the hotel, gone to the address, and it's not a hotel, it's just a building. And the hotel only exists on paper, and it's like some scam for tax. But I've heard crazy stories about shit over in China. So I just wanted to get your take. Like, I mean, I saw a lot of people calling for the boycott of WESG on this basis. I think the fact they resolved it so quickly and professionally put a statement out immediately saying this isn't good enough, we're really sorry. I didn't know what your take on it was, because it's a terrible look for esports.
I mean, my first thought was similar to that. Like, my first thought when I heard about the hotel was like, what are the circumstances here? So this is very different as soon as you hear about the fact that apparently the hotel cancelled on them from if they'd have chosen this hotel and put you in it knowingly. That's obviously a massive difference in terms of like how culpable you are, etc. I mean, presumably they've had to do it last minute. It's also another aspect where sadly events will never get a break from this from fans, because the fan, let's face it, is just a pleb sat at home and all he's doing is watching whatever happens on stream or on Twitter. So he has no idea about event logistics. So I've known tournaments in the past that had comparable problems. Like, you know, turns out half of the PCs don't work, even though we tested them all. They all worked before we flew them out. You know, we've got a partner that we've worked with before. These things happen. Or, for example, hotel doesn't have enough rooms, even though they said they did, and they've overbooked and all these sorts of things. The problem with that is, think about it, if you're a guy at home for a second. When you do an event, and some of these events can cost millions to put on, you're doing a massive event like that. You don't just have a massive like slush fund of secret money that you can just spend for nothing. No, you've probably planned out most of the money you're going to spend and you spent on the event.
Time, right?
So if all of a sudden you have to pay off a corrupt official thousands of dollars, like I heard one tournament had to do a couple of years ago where someone just turned up and said, pay us this or the event stops now.
Yeah.
Or for example, you have to buy a load of PCs or... I mean, remember, all these solutions I'm giving are things that have to happen instantly right now with no prep. So say players go on Twitter and say, this desk is shit. You now have to get people to go buy desks, bring them to the event. That's the cheaper version. You know, hotels obviously could be massive expense. I assume when you have a hotel, you have that deal months in advance. You've tried to get a block deal. You come to someone else and say, oh, yeah, I need to house about 100 people and it has to be today. You think that guy doesn't just go, well, I've got you over a fucking barrel, so I'm just going to charge you twice my normal rate. And if you don't like it, you can go elsewhere. So I'd say fair play to him for actually fixing it. I will say, like in light of the problems the tournament had last year, and it did look pretty ropey from top to bottom,
yeah,
that doesn't really play into your benefit. I have to assume there was maybe a level of incompetence here. But then the other aspect that I can't really comment on is I don't, like actually China's a country I don't know that much about generally. Like Korea, I just know about from living there or from esports, you know. So I'm not actually sure in China like how easy it would be to spot if someone was dodgy here or if someone would cancel on you last minute. So I can't really comment on that aspect. I will say I haven't really heard of this something as extreme as this happening before, but then again, most tournaments aren't in China, are they? Like there's a good reason why they aren't.
Yeah, and it's like on that point, right, with WESG, another reason why I didn't want to give them both fucking barrels. Because, yeah, you're right. This isn't the first time there's been a fuck-up at a WESG tournament. And certainly it isn't the first time that the tournament's kind of looked incredibly amateurish from an outside perspective. But I do keep talking about the importance of, like, trying to make inroads into the Chinese market. And it was, you know, there's a reason why all of the 1.6 players have this huge reverence for competing in China. You'll see GetRight talking about, oh, wouldn't it be great if WESG could fix these issues and we'd love to go back to China again and all this, like, because the 1.6 players, when they went out there and had a history of competing, going back to like WCG in like 2009, I think it was, in Chengdu, if I remember rightly, they, you know, they were welcome with like open arms. The fans were going nuts for them. You had decent 1.6 teams in the form of Tai Lu, and I can't remember the name of the other one. It began with a C, C.N or something.
WNV.
WNV. You know, so and the games were competitive, and the crowds were into it. It wasn't like just some token thing they put on in the background and like passers by like walk past. You know, like you see at some expos, and they were like. You know, Khan will tell you, you know, we've got mates with Khan. They were treated like fucking gods out there. People queuing around the block to sign, to get them to sign things at a time when esports players didn't do autographs. That was like a weird thing that had only just started to take off. So it's such a huge market and so vitally important to games developers and competitive games. You know, PUBG, it's often leveled at them that they're propped up by the huge numbers they have in China, where it's like way more popular than say something like Overwatch, which is in, you know, terminal decline in China. For me, I think it's always important to kind of try and at least be a little bit more understanding when you're trying to break a new territory. Like had this been happening in like North America, then yeah, both barrels for me, because there's not really any excuse and the stakes aren't really that high because you've got a long line of competitors that will do your event better anyway. So there is almost like a little bit of bias, I guess, in the sense that I haven't been as critical of them. But I certainly hope next time around they can get through without all these fucking problems, because I would like CSGO to break the Chinese market.
Yeah, and also I will just say as well, like, I know, here's the thing, in the modern day, I do think players nowadays pretty much would respond the same to any tournament organizer. Like, I even think, well, with the obvious exception that this would never happen if it was like CIS players in Epicenter or Brazilian players in a tournament in Brazil. And with those caveats, generally, I think players would call it out. But in the past, we have had scenarios that were super fucking shady, some of the places people stayed. And before the era where players realized their power on social media, there was a lot of bias in which ones were called shitholes and which ones were just left to be not that bad, you know. So I don't know. The problem with this is, like I say, unfortunately, it does just tie back into the fact that for a tournament with that much money, WSG is just underwhelming on all regards, you know. So unfortunately, it just plays back into that again. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but it's not like they had great standing to begin with.
Yeah. And then there was some drama before the drama in the form of what happened with Na'Vi. Now, there was two Na'Vi players that just dipped out of this tournament at the last minute. And it seemed to come in a very strange situation. Like, just to give a little bit of context, you know, I think me and Duncan, I think our views are aligned on this. About Na'Vi, that one of the worst things that could have happened to that team was sort of having that miracle run it had where they almost beat Mouse Sports and at Star Series and looked good in patches due to an incredible carry performance by Simple and Flamey actually turning up and playing well. Edward is still a garbage decision maker for a pro of his experience and is a fucking liability. Zeus is like the Mekon. Like, for such a muscular guy, it's incredible to fucking see him when he's on the server because he does play like he's got no fucking arms or something. And then, like, you know, there's just fundamental issues within the core of the team. There's, like, weaknesses that they're not getting over. And now, when you have, like, a good run like that and almost win a tournament, you go, see, guys, we can do it. No, you can't. This was, like, a fucking very unique set of circumstances that has enabled you to get to this point. But they went and played, was it the ECS online qualifier?
I think so, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I think that was right. And they came up against fucking Godsent. Now, Godsent, as you may have already guessed based on previous things, I think they are nothing. I think they are a player's graveyard that is propped up by a phenomenally talented player in the form of Twist, who seems content to piss his entire career away for reasons I'll never fathom. And like one or two players that have potential, but with no experienced, sensible head to guide them and direct them and develop them. Godsent seems like a nothing project that's limping along because Refresh desperately want to sell it to a bidder. It's a shame you've done absolutely nothing to make the brand as good as it could be. I like your logo, but it's like I said, that fucking Illuminati eye should just have a single tear running down its triangular cheek with what you've done with it. It's a fucking absolute abomination what it's become. But all of that being said, they will occasionally throw in an upset, right? And they did throw up they threw up an upset by beating Na'Vi, you know, who I would say I would probably give Na'Vi the edge. And then Na'Vi battled back through, got to have a replay with Godsent, and they got done in by Godsent twice. So it seems to me that even though the players, we'll get to the statements in a moment, even though the players said, oh, it's nothing to do with that, why we're not going to China, it did come right after they'd had these super disappointing results. And it's hard for me to not link the two things. So what's your take on what went down?
Well, especially the biggest problem here is, like, this is a classic example. Like, I'll tie this back into that immortal scenario that happened at DreamHack Montreal, where half of their problem was each of the three players involved decided, I'll take care of this. Right, here's my statement on what happened. I haven't bothered corroborating my story with any of the others, so man's just going to be totally different to everything they say, including times being different, people who did or didn't say things being different, and at the end, wrapping it up with mutually exclusive final stories, and then be like, what? You are calling me a liar? Like, you know, it's sort of that scenario, because it's like, if one of you said, I couldn't attend the event, like, this is how dumb these guys are, right? Here's the thing, Flamey and Simple, put your heads together. If one of you doesn't attend, there's a pretty good case the whole team can just not attend, isn't there? Just get one of you to have the best story and not attend. Because what are the odds both of you can't attend? And then for totally different reasons. What are the odds?
Well, we'll get into the
one of those mysteries, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll get into the statement.
What's this fucking shit Twilight Zone episode? A man could not attend events for personal reasons, but his friend also had other reasons for not attending. Were those reasons connected? No one will ever know, but perhaps we can investigate in the outer limits.
Behind the scary door. So look, right, he says, this is Flamey's statement. There are plenty of personal issues that led to us not going at WESG.
Don't want to mention any of them, of course.
Yeah, we haven't got time for that.
Remember, by the way, every player in the world, if their dog dies, if their dad dies, will say publicly on Twitter, can't believe I've lost my dad or my dog, like so terrible, like I'm really depressed. But then bizarrely, whenever they need to like get kicked from a team, like, personal reasons are the personal reasons that you're shit or hate your team. Those would be personal reasons. You're right. Your lawyers, fucking Saul, has correctly advised you that those are in fact personal reasons. Yeah, you can write those off. It's cool.
So it says the team has time to make a replacement.
Definitely, of course, we are visa stuck, but
yeah, like I don't know if you know what it's like to get a visa to go to China. It's a complex issue, and it can be expedited, like a lot of things in China, by knowing the right people and, dare I say, greasing the right palms. Not sure this is one of those situations, though. Anyway, the team has time to make a replacement. Also, there is an opportunity to make a visa on arrival. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. So absolutely any player from Russia can go. I am ready to pay a ticket on behalf of that player if the organizations refuse to do so. I'm sorry for framing, I'm not quite sure what that means there, but for framing, failing maybe, my teammates and fans, but considering the current state, it will be a total failure to participate in this tournament. I hope that Hooch or the stand-in can arrive and show good results. I do not ask you for the support. Everything will be okay. It's not the end of the world. This break is vital for future results. So he's kind of like saying, it's got nothing to do with the team, everything's okay, but actually we need to take this break and me not go to this tournament, and it'll benefit Na'Vi in the future. And obviously, of course, keep in mind, because there's a Ukrainian-Russian divide, they wouldn't have been playing as a five anyway, which makes it even more kind of weird and abstract that this happened. Anyway, Russia were able to get Hooch, I believe, so no problems there. And there was then Simple made a statement. Now, but I must say, both of these statements were translated by Fishiest Dude on Twitter. That's the guy who likes to pretend, or used to pretend, to be Zeus. And
now he's just settled for being nobody.
Yeah, exactly. And he's better for it. So anyway, but shout out to him. Thanks for translating this. So I want to apologize. This is a Simple statement. I want to apologize to all the fans who wanted to see our team in China. I couldn't go because of health, nervous system, pressure from the past 2 weeks, and individual and team practice. Now, no doubt Simple has a fucking sore back. Like, there is no doubt about that. But, like, this is a guy who, when Katowice was on, he was tweeting, I want to go play, please. Hang on, I thought you were fucking exhausted, mate. What is it? It's slightly contradictory is all I'm saying. But anyway, I'm not here to lawyer him up.
Come on,
I don't
want to
lawyer
part.
Your boy.
This is the part that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it
does. Each of those excuses in their own justifies not attending. Why do we have all four or five at once?
Yeah.
So here's the problem. I'm ill. All right, no problem then. You can have the... Yeah, but I've also got a lot of stress from the last few years. Well, fucking hell, take some time off then. No, but health issues. Well, fuck, take care of your health. It's the most important thing. Immune system depleted. Not enough omega-3. Get a fish, eat some of it. Okay. Also, this will benefit the future. But why is he just listed off more and more? Like it's like he's trying to cold read you. Like, he didn't buy the health one. Immune system. Your immune system is failing. They don't know what immune system is. That's too vague, isn't it? The translation's failed me. The pressure. It's too much pressure in the game. Fuck. Why would there be five reasons at once? Sounds like bullshit.
It doesn't even end there. He goes, I'm not one of those who doesn't want to go because I didn't want to.
Oh, he's nailed right. It there then. We can't possibly accuse him of that then. Since he just said it's not true. So.
Yeah, this is the first time where I feel like I need a rest and the team should go without me. Well, that sounds like you didn't want to go. You needed a rest.
Here's the thing. It doesn't matter if you need a rest or not. You've got health issues, so you can't attend. So why would you mention that?
I never allow myself to rest during big events, said the player that was desperately saying he wanted to play at Katowice and was joking about if anyone needed a ringer. I never did it in 5 years during competitive play, but now I feel that I need it because health is most important. No, this isn't tilt, and not because we lost our last game. That was the godsend game. It's all me and how I look at things today. And with my condition, there was a chance to go with another player, but some players didn't want to. Like, what is going on here? I'm ready to take your hate. It's not the first time for me. I hope you can understand me. So played a little bit of a sympathy card at the end. but he don't get my simpy. He don't get my simpy at
like
all.
Bullshit.
It's so all over the place. Like this is like when you get catch a kid at school. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you were passing that note around in class, weren't you? You were the one that says Mr. Gorman is a cunt. You were passing it round. Looks like your handwriting, doesn't it? Well, no, it can't be my handwriting, actually, because my pen's blue ink and that's in black ink. And I didn't even touch it anyway. And you haven't got my finger, but like, fucking hell, all right.
All right, then. So where's your pen then? The thing. I had to lend his pen earlier, and it's like, you know, they just fall apart, don't they? Because the problem is the first lie's not good, so everything they add on from there is just shit as well, isn't it? That's another thing as well, right? If you are these sorts of players, so these aren't the most articulate players we have in the scene. These aren't the players who know. Just get someone else to write the fucking statement for you. And when they do, tell them, make it believable. Tell them, pick one reason, make it believable. Like, this is the thing that's so suspicious about it. People are going to think I'm, like, laboring this point. If you had any of the first reasons, health issues, immune system problems, those are enough already. You are physically now, it would be unreasonable to expect you to attend a mix event that isn't even with Na'Vi. That's it. It's over. So the very idea you keep piling on more things and then giving reasons which don't make sense, like, you know, but I wouldn't just skip the event. What are you talking about? Of course you'd skip it if you were ill. Like, it doesn't all add up. What's mad is every next sentence forgets the excuse they said before and addresses it fresh. So it makes you think it was a load of shit. There's like that famous saying, like, I think it's like a Mark Twain saying or something. It's like, if you don't lie, you never have to remember your lies or something stupid, isn't it? If you just tell the truth, you know where you are.
I don't want to theory craft too much on what's gone on here, but it definitely looks like there's been some sort of inter-team meltdown, because some players were quite content to go, others weren't. You know, I don't know why that might be. It could be as well organizational pressure. Maybe the players don't want to go to China and play in a tournament, but obviously the organization will be getting a fresh cut of that money.
Yeah, I'm actually amazed that these orgs, like, I get it, right? If it's like SK Gaming or fucking Cloud9, you get to have your actual team at the event. You could also win the event and they represent you. Cool. That's all great for your sponsors. Why? I don't know why any of the teams that are like, it's not even the team attending, like fucking Belgium or whatever. I mean, I guess Existence doesn't technically play for LDLC right now, but I don't know why any of these teams like particularly think it's cool that their players are just risking being injured or knackered or fucking playing and just getting mad or tilted. And so, like, every game you're playing in Counter-Strike right now, or how many tournaments there are, is like playing someone an extra game in the fucking NFL where you've already got like the bye to the playoffs. No, rest that guy. There's no point risking him. Why would you? You're already in a position where you're doing fine. So, I mean, that's the reason also why this one's very different. It would be a big difference if it was Na'Vi not attending and now these players made these comments. But if they even just said in their statement, by the way, you know what? I just decided I don't want to fucking go and play a mixed tournament WSG and actually just want to stay home and only play tournaments Na'Vi. I'd say, right, you're a bit of an arsehole for waiting till the end and fucking over your teammates that are in the team. But I could totally understand your reasoning. Why the fuck would you want to go there? Although, well, I have to say, as a side point, both those teams could have won the tournament as well. Those are actually pretty decent lineups.
I mean, so here's the other thing I wanted to kind of ask you, like, a lot of people, because you know what it's like, the fucking, when these things blow up on Reddit, even though it literally has, it doesn't even really have any impact on the professional scene in any way, shape or form, not to a great degree. There was a lot of people sort of moralizing, like, well, what should be done to them? Players can't just back out of LANs at the last minute, as if it's never ever happened before and it's only these players who have decided to do it. But it does sort of raise, a question. I mean, for me, the only people that really should be thinking about whether or not this is unacceptable is the organization themselves, based on how badly they wanted to attend and where WESG fitted into their priorities. And, of course, the teammates who also wanted to attend, because it sounds like some did and some didn't. Now, there shouldn't be. This reminds me of like when Dozier was like a fucking ringer in that fucking tournament for like Kazakhstan or whatever the fuck. And it was just so obvious he was just better than the player he was ringing for, and he didn't even have the wherewithal. I'd be like, I will play a bit worse. Like, he just didn't do it, did he? But anyway, and then people were going, oh, this is as bad as fixing a match. Like, really? really? I had to make the fucking video. Yeah. Like, why are we all trying to witch hunt Dozier? Yeah. And then it was like, you know, a month later, ha ha ha, we call him X God when really he is not the X sex God. Ha 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 ha. Like,
right, okay, the joke is that he is so repulsive, no one will want to have sexual relations with him. We are all adults. Imagine, he will die alone, probably alcoholic. Hilarious. Yeah. What next? Imagine CS already just going into the fucking streets. Look at this guy. Look at this old veteran. He is dying of drug abuse. His family don't want him home for Christmas, and he is not taking advantage
Why
of
it. Why won't it stop?
That's what CS Gore. I've never thought that name was funny. It's fucking tragic, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I've never called him the ex-god. I like Dozier. You know it. I don't think he's the most cerebral of players, but I like him. I heard he's a good time party guy. What I've always been worried about, of course, is if the ex-god meme has entered his brain and believes it's real.
Exactly. That would be like if everyone just went around calling fucking JW Adonis and just being like, he has the chiseled features. Like, first of all, it's just cruel. Second, leaving this shit. Just go around himself. Just call me the Adonis.
No, but it's like, do you remember that story that they told about him, where it was like all the players, like he came in and he was wearing, like Dozier came in, they were all in a swimming pool. I can't remember what event it was. Yeah. And he had nothing on but a robe and like some Speedos, right? Some like really like, you know, absolutely obscene Speedos on. And when he came out, all the players started like going, X God, and like bowing like this on the fucking floor. And like Dozier was like Randy Orton, dropping that, took his robe off and got in the pool. Like, guys, don't be doing that, man. That's fucked up. That's all I'm saying, mate. Anyway, where the fuck were we with this one, man? You fucking twisted my melon. Witch hunting. So like, I just don't think this is necessarily a big issue. I think it's like uncool to fuck up your teammates like this. But it's like an internal issue. It's not for the community to police. It's not for like tournament organizers to get involved in. Certainly not for Valve to get involved in. This is like almost like a fucking very low level contractual dispute, right? That's it. So I don't know why it blew up on Twitter and people were like, oh, this is so unprofessional. These people are paid to play and they must play all of the time. And I was like, fucking give it a rest, will you? You know what I mean? Like, I'll call out any old shit, but this isn't anything to get upset about, right?
No. People go way too far with that sort of shit. I actually wonder, you know, there's something I've had a thought about in the wider context of society anyway, and obviously esports is just basically people's entertainment who are into video games. It's like their version of sports or just wrestling or whatever TV show they would watch. I sometimes wonder, because the part that never made sense to me as someone who's been involved in scandals and had like controversy, etc.
Really?
Is if you've been involved in it a lot, right? It's one thing if you're someone where it happened once in your career, because to that person, he might really think, sadly, oh, whatever that thing I said was so bad that, you know, it's affected all the community and people were so outraged and upset. And that's why they often come out with that ridiculous apology where sometimes you want to tell them all privately, like, listen, like, apologize for something, but you don't have to literally, you know, you haven't done some mad crime or something, you know, like, it's not that bad. But because of the reaction in proportion, they think, fucking hell, I'm the one whose whole social sort of radar was off, you know. What they don't realize is it's actually so hit and miss what does become a scandal and what does make people outraged. Like, I actually do really think at this point in time, there's not that much connection between the story that causes the outrage and the outrage. Like, as much as people want to make it that, like, the media, like, manufactures outrage, to me, it's like making something go viral. You can sort of follow certain rules and eventually something's going to go viral, but you can't make a story go viral. You can't make a thing go viral. So in the same sense, I think a lot of this is just people people's own fucking life. Like maybe they're just having a bad time in their life, or it's a downtime in the community where there's not a tournament, or people are a bit frustrated with where CS is and they want it to be bigger, whatever it might be. I think, unfortunately, these sorts of stories just tap into all that. And that's where all the sort of negative emotion comes from. Because actually, to tie it into something that happened recently, when there was this like very, very minor storm in a teacup scandal over in Overwatch, over using fucking emotes, people always come out with these mad comments that have nothing to do with it. Like, you'll have someone who'll make a comment like, oh yeah, you think that's not racism? When I was a 12-year-old boy growing up as a second-generation immigrant, people used to come up to me and say the most racist things to me about the country I come from. And you just go, like, yeah, I get it, mate. That sounds really fucking terrible. And I'm sorry that's happened to you. But what does that have to do with this story? That is in no way relevant. But somehow, the story and sort of the mechanism of outrage taps into those negative feelings in you. And that's what's flowing out to the rest of us now. So I agree. I don't know what made people so bothered about this particular incident. I can think of worse things have happened this year than this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, one thing I will say is there were at least people sort of advocating, well, you know, if Simple doesn't want to play, fuck it. Like, if he wants a rest, fuck it. Dive out of this tournament. It's not even a real tournament, is it? It's like you say, a bunch of glorified mixes masquerading as like a tournament. So realistically, he's only playing for himself and whatever cut the organization would get from his attendance. If he wants a break, let him have it. So there were some people saying that. But like on a much smaller scale, there were some people absolutely frothing at the mouth over another land dodge that happened. Now, I don't know if you ever heard, because I know you don't follow a lot of the sort of peripheral noise. You focus on top tier Counter-Strike, the top tier teams, the best players. Yeah. And even if you're tier two to Thorin, you do not exist until you enter into the tier one, right? That's how Thorin handles his business. And I understand it, because it's not like CSGO is the only game. And even though he may appear godlike, he is mortal. And he has lots of other games he needs to remember. Plus, he's learning a new one in the form of Overwatch. You can only cram so much information in. Me, on the other hand, I'll watch any old shit Counter-Strike. And I follow the lives of unbelievably, terribly shit players. So I'm going to tell you a story about Bogdan. I don't know if you ever... You heard of this guy?
A guy from America. I've only heard that shit with him and Steel.
Yeah, so Bogdan was like a player who made it in like fucking rank S or whatever, I think it was. I can't remember if it was rank S or... Yeah, it must be rank S.
I assume so.
Yeah, so he basically was due to play at a LAN. A small local LAN, not a big one. And he literally bailed the day before the event. So it's a very sort of similar situation to what happened with Flamey and Simple. Nobody wanted... Like, and by the way, I think Bogdan is an utter cretin. I've listened to him. Like, I remember when Steel went through and like did all of the VODs of like some of the plays he was doing, like peeking while reloading and then trying to justify it. And then like when he got kicked out of rank S, like, yeah, like literally justifying it. No, but if a shoulder peeking while I'm reloading, it means I can be quicker on the re-peek or something. Like, I'm like, fucking get me out. But anyway, so like, and Steel just pissing himself laughing about how bad he was. And then, of course, he tried to frame it that he'd been bullied out of fucking rank S, when in actual fact, he was just a nightmare to play with, because A, he wasn't good enough, and B, he was one of these assholes who just didn't want to learn. He thought every terrible play he made was justifiable. And quite famously, the one thing he got right blew up and became Bogdan's law, right? So, but when he bailed the day before an event, everyone lost their fucking minds. There was like American pros on Twitter saying, and this is why Bogdan should be banned from all tournament. Like, what? For fucking skipping out on a LAN? It just means he's less likely to go to the next one, because who's going to take the risk? You just play yourself in that situation. You got a day, they got a replacement. But like, it just shows that when you have like a degree of notoriety or fame, the behavior doesn't even really matter anymore, you know? Like, Bogdan, a low-level player, not even good enough for fucking rank S, gets absolutely crucified on a front-page Reddit thread where he even spelled his name wrong. And meanwhile, people will go to bat for Simple and on Flamey for doing the exact same thing. So I just think, you know, that there is no moral compass, is there, within the community, is the point I'm trying to illustrate. And it was a good way to just slip Bogdan into the podcast and say he was a cretin, so... Pretty proud of myself there, Dunk. What do you think?
Now maybe he'll do a tweet or a stream. It'll get back on Reddit.
Yeah.
And bish, bash, bosh. Back in the public eye.
Just like you said. Just like you said. Back in the game. Right?
Exactly. Like, oh, by the way, though, like the other thing is as well, on the whole Simple thing, like here's the thing. For all we know, maybe there is some real personal issue that's going on. The problem is, I will say that because this is an example of why humans are just fucking terrible, right? Because obviously it's such a reasonable thing to say. Like, I've had, you know, I'm having real big personal problems. I don't really want to talk about it, but just trust me, I need to have time off. Because that is the most like plausible thing you can say. Every cunt's used that excuse to the ends of the earth and has completely devalued it now. So when we all see it, we all assume, well, that's a lie, isn't it? So as a result, unfortunately, if something terrible has happened in Sybil's life, sorry, mate, it's not you that we're really reckoning it, but all your teammates and past fraternal members of the pro players unions who have lied about leaving every fucking team for the last 4 years and why they're getting kicked from a team and, you know, all this sort of stuff. In reality, they have ruined it for you, mate. They're the ones that have made that excuse mean nothing.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see a doctor's note.
So look,
it would be baller as if he actually had one and it was a real doctor's note with a head crack. But then when he got to the end, it was like Dr. Duncan Shields, but no one noticed till the end. That would be straight fire, wouldn't it?
No, if anyone was going to write him a fucking sick note, it would be you, of course. So look, while we're just talking about low level bullshit, because obviously we're going to end on a couple of big stories, I've deliberately done the saggy midriff of the podcast where, you know, we're going to deal
dossier.
With
the of their podcast, yeah. The X-God.
X-God. Right.
So, that's like some scene out of fucking Twin Peaks or something. What even is that?
Man, it was like the end of society, for fuck's sake. Like, straight fire reference.
Yeah, not bad.
But yeah.
I imagine that is how Dorsey has sex.
Right. I hope you...
Leave
hope
that you in. It's not well known enough to be timestamped.
Right, well. I'm leave fucking... As if you're going to fucking... fight for that to stay in. Anyway,
after everything, yeah.
Yeah, after everything.
I need that in. Yeah, it's in my contract. I get one.
I want that in. I get one.
I need that.
Fucking hell. Right. So anyway, while we're talking about like this land, it was the Mad City land also had something happen, which was pretty fucking wild, and it was reported by DJ, obviously the Observer. We know. Calls himself Prius because his surname is Cunts, and he honestly thought he could work in esports with the name DJ Cunts.
To be fair, it is because only Cunts would choose a Prius.
Not bad. But yeah, so anyway, he calls himself Prius for obvious reasons. I love him. I love DJ's good kid.
I will say he is one of those people where I don't really know him. He's just one of those people who doesn't say much, so as a result, you can't hate him. So for all I know, maybe he's a cunt.
His surname certainly indicates it, doesn't it?
Benefit of the doubt for people that they could betray me in the end.
So anyway, he reported it on his Twitter that there'd been a fight at this land, like an actual fist fight. Some 17-year-old player had been talking shit to a 27-year-old player. And he got up, the older player got up and got in someone's face. They had a punch up.
It's like a sounds like a real guy. Oh, this 17-year-old's talking shit to me. Mm. I could physically assault you. Oh, you probably win then.
I mean, this is how the story about me and Loader is always told, of course. Like Loader was just 12 playing in his first Dota tournament. You know, like, whatever. So anyway, you can see here that the police came and actually cuffed somebody and took him away. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, so this is just the reason I wanted to bring it up, right? I remember, and because it's dear to my heart, because I am always, for like defending myself, I am always cast as like the fucking, the thug of the esports scene, right? Because of, you know, my transgression in defending myself from being headbutted. But honestly, people don't realize there has been this weird undercurrent of violence at like CS events like since forever. Like, I remember going to events. I talked about this the other day. People were asking me,
and
like,
by the way, CS specifically.
Yeah, no, specifically.
Can't think of any other game that ever came close to the level of like violence in that sense.
Yeah, I know, man. It's crazy. So I remember going to events in like 2007, 2008, where like established top level pros. Because I used to do the seeds for iSeries, so as part of my the website would do it, and I was like the resident CSS expert. So I would do the seeds. So every time a team got a seed they thought was unfair, they would be absolutely livid, because obviously the way a 128-team bracket works, seeding definitely becomes important in that context, you know? And every time I gave someone a bad seed, like the top level pros would be like, right, I'm going to fucking beat you up. People squaring up to me. I've been pushed. People like throwing things at me, calling me a cunt because I didn't give them a good seed. There was one event where I wrote like a feature that was like breaking down the like the real dark horses at a UK event. And I picked this team out. And I just said, these are just a bunch of shitters. They, you know, they're all mouth, no trousers, like, fuck them. They're not going to do nothing at this tournament, you know, because that was the style I wrote in back then. And there was a recording of them planning to stab me at the event off a Ventrilo. Like, they were even going like, oh, you distract the security, yeah? And we'll go and we'll knife him. We'll get him right in the side. No one, like it was a prison shanking, you know? And all I'd said was this team was fucking shit. Now, somebody got that recording and, like, sent it to the tournament admins, and they listened to it and went, it's just all a bit of banter, that, though, Rich. You can always not come. If
boys will be boys, yeah, you know.
But they were just like that. So that was how
it was. A horseplay.
Yeah, that was how it was straight rolling back in the day. And I talked about it on a podcast, too. There has been two people punched in the face at two high-profile CS events in 2017, and it's all been hushed up. And we also talked about how certain people's family members and entourages were rolling around threatening people. Like, people will look at this and go, small land. I'm telling you, it's been
happening. These are massive lands.
Yeah, this has been happening at top level lands as well. You know, it's absurd to me. So I wanted to, like, pick your brains on it. Like, I don't know what it is about, like, CS that seems to make these things happen with an increased frequency. Obviously, this stuff's absolutely pathetic. Like, if you can't handle trash talking about how good you are at a video game, maybe don't go to LAN, because that is part of the game. That mind game is part of how you win, especially at small local LANs where you sit across from each other and you are within earshot. Pros used to do that. Taz used to be the master of that. So if you can't handle someone saying you're fucking shit, you're shit, you're shit, you're shit constantly, especially if you are shit and you want to throw a punch at someone, you are a pathetic, sad cunt, especially if you're doing it to a child, basically. But I wanted to pick your brains about, like, why on earth it just seems to happen at CS events, like, more than any other event.
Yeah. Well, like I say, because, it's not even it's specifically that it's bizarrely it's CS. Like, the only thing I can think of that's comparable is, as far as I know, in the US, they have a similar thing with, like, the games like Call of Duty, which I guess fit a similar niche, you know. That's kind of the similar type of game. Part of it, I think, would have to be that, like, this might sound abstract, but when I think of games like League of Legends, I mean, back in the day, StarCraft, etc., no matter what people think, if you ever go and look at the average player of those sorts of games, like, both casual and professional, they are mega nerds. Like, it's no exaggeration. The stereotype of who used to play StarCraft Brood War would be, like, some, like, third-generation Korean immigrant who's, like, 15 years old, and he does all his schoolwork and is on the fucking honor roll, and then for fun, his idea of, like, a crazy jape is to just play some StarCraft online and then hope he doesn't get caught because he should be doing even more homework. And that really was the average player, which is why, if you look at their community, shit-talking was never allowed in those games. From day one, to not even say good game at the end of a match was like the highest insult you could issue. Meanwhile, if you come from Counter-Strike, every game on the casual level, especially back in the days where there was nobody could ban you because Valve didn't do anything, every game would be someone in the server would be talking shit to the other team and blaming them or trying to rile them up and say, oh, you're lucky, you know, wrecked you on every... It would be like that from every... So the ambience was always like that. So to me, this is like a positive in a way, I guess, is I always felt like, for me, Counter-Strike was a game that people went to because in theory it was hard compared to some of these other ones, and you wanted to be the best and wanted to prove yourself. So as a result, you're always sort of... It's like a very masculine game in that sense. You're always jostling for position, where you are in the hierarchy. If you're not doing that well, you always have to explain why you're not doing well and bark a bit and tell people that you're better than them, and, you know, just because your score's better than me doesn't make you better than me, and, you know, you got lucky on that kill and you get carried anyway and your team's shit. All that's sort of just part of the atmosphere of Counter-Strike. Now, unfortunately, I do think that also leads to scenarios where if you're in person, That's all. Like, here's the thing. None of these fights ever have to actually happen. But what always happens is because in person, that's in the background, that like, if you know, it's like that, like there was a great Joe Rogan bit he once did. I don't know if he ever did it in like a stand up or if it was just on his podcast, where he basically said, like, the reason why to him fighting, like mixed martial arts, is the ultimate sport, is because if you ever slam a basketball in someone's face, you know, you go past them, they go up to try and block you, but you slam it right in their face. Yeah. When you do it right, you even sort of look at them and like, mean man, like, yeah, how'd you like that? Well, what you're really doing there is just a fucking abstraction for fighting. That's just for beating them up. And when you do that, right, yes, in the moment, that guy, because he also understands the symbol of what you've done, it's like, oh, he's sort of beating me. But let's face it, if that guy who you just slammed the basketball on punched you in the face, you got into a fight, and he beat your fucking ass, no one at the end of it would go, you did still slam a basketball in his face, so you sort of win that. Everyone would go, no, you got absolutely schooled and shown up, because ultimately, the ultimate form of competition between men is fighting. So, unfortunately, if you're ever in person, I mean, anyone at school must know this, if you ever, like, banter someone and you win the banter battle, if that person could kick your ass, they're definitely going to pull that as the final, like, well, this is my get-out-of-jail-free card, I will now beat you up, or just intimidate you, you know, so you have to back down. That's always the way you win. So unfortunately, in Counter-Strike, with all the like bruised egos and people who are, let's face it, almost every player at Counter-Strike's delusional. I mean, I am. If I play, I always think, oh, that guy pre-fired me, lads. They're not, I even do that Idris shit where it's like, he did the incorrect play to come soundly defeat me in a way where I could do nothing. That shouldn't have worked because he couldn't know I was going to do such a bad play. You know, like, I use that sort of stupid logic. So sadly, whenever there's that tension in the background, you'll get this happening. Unfortunately, on the pro level, I will say the pro level's different because most of the ones I'm aware of on the pro level are just idiots at after parties. And so you just add all two already that mix. And then you get these stupid scenarios. And also people coming from cultures where it's just cool to roll with a massive entourage who might physically threaten someone. I mean, I don't personally think that's cool. I have to say that I think people pick their targets well, Rich, because if any of these people ever fucked with me, I'm not joking. I will keep it going forever in public. I will make sure every tournament bans you. I will even go to like government officials. I will contact visa application places. I'll make sure everyone knows who you are, what you have done in all these countries, and it will haunt you to the end of all time. Come at me if you want some of this. I will absolutely just do everything else.
Yeah, everything but, No, exactly. But I mean, so...
That's all you need to know.
I think it's interesting.
Nuts off. I don't give a fuck.
I think it's interesting because, you know, one of the things that definitely stood out to me is almost like how sort of jockey CS is by sort of comparison.
Here's another thing, Rich. So let me just actually tie that in. I guess I should have said that. That was I forgot to make that point. When I made the point of how the MOBAs and the RTS games are more the nerds, that's what's always been weird about Counter-Strike, and especially if you come from the UK, you know this. Because, yeah, I understand that, like, most of the Swedish players in Counter-Strike still are nerds in a way, right? But there are so many people in the UK who played Counter-Strike who basically aren't nerds. They're basically people who essentially, most of them like football, funnily enough, they're mostly just your average bloke who happened to find out about Counter-Strike at some point in his teens usually, and so that became like a thing he did, but most of them never became nerds. Like, I always said this to Lurpis, it was so bizarre to me when I came back to Big Lands in like the latter part of the 2000s, because when I came back to Lands, I would go to these massive tournaments and there would be like pro players who'd played for 5 years who were asking their teammate, how do I change the monitor to that resolution that I'm using? And I'd be going, oh, fuck. Like, the whole point is, if you were like an early Quake player, a Counter-Strike player, you were like a nerd, so you knew everything about your PC and how to optimize it and how to put the drivers on. Like, some of these guys just play Counter-Strike. That's it. They're not even into computers that much. So there has always been a weird part, especially in the UK, where, like, this is one of the reasons I always give as my number one reason why UK CS is not big, is that the coolest thing you can say if you are from the UK is like, I wasn't trying, though. I beat you, but I wasn't trying, really. Yeah. I mean, to anyone else, you're a loser if you say that. I mean, you are to me. Like, that's not cool. But to them, that is cool. So the ultimate thing is, you want to be a jock. You want to be a bloke who goes out drinking and just like, but I sort of fuck around with Counter-Strike on the, you know, it's like fucking Ice Cube. I fucked around and got triple-double, you know. That's the sort of shit people want. That is Counter-Strike in a nutshell.
Yeah, and, you know, like I say, I think, like, I don't want anything about Counter-Strike to change. Like, you know, obviously, I do not fucking condone violence. I don't think you should be going up to someone and punching them in the face because of what's happening in a video game. But I also understand that during like competitive pursuits, ones that do get your adrenaline spiking, which I think Counter-Strike is phenomenal for, one that definitely feels like, you know, you can have a real impact on the game as an individual. Like, you can take over a game just you by yourself, get yourself into that Super Saiyan hyped up mindset.
In real sports, yeah. This happens between men. Like, there was a story recently in the NBA where Chris Paul, who no longer plays for the Clippers, right, went back and played the Clippers again, and he got into, like, a confrontation on the court with the next teammate. And then after the game, because it's his old building that he used to play in, he, like, tried to get access to the locker room of his old team to go in and fucking, like, front up to the guy and start, like, basically trying to kick his ass. It's happened in a few scenarios like that. And this is people, by the way, who are getting paid so many millions. Like, you know, if the logical part of their brain took over, it'd go, don't do this, you're risking your whole career and stuff. But it's not. It's like the fucking lizard part of your brain that's like, I must destroy and conquer. He has insulted me.
Yeah. That's, you know, it's true, though. It's really weird. It it sort of seems to happen in CS more than any other game. But it's like, I do love the fucking competitive drive. I do love how hype it can get. I hate the fact that recently we've had this kind of like trend in Counter-Strike where it's like, we discourage trash talk. We don't put teams across from each other anymore. So they, you know, they can't hear each other and stand up and try and get inside each other's heads. Like, I miss that part of Counter-Strike, like being completely fucking honest about it. But I feel that
I die inside every time they do those tweets where it's like they tweet at the team that just like lost, you know, like fucking ninth place. Oh, it's okay, bro. You'll be back next event. Like, I know you guys are going to be back. Like, here's the thing. You don't have to obviously trash talk all the time. But first of all, if you don't actually like that guy, don't be fake as fucking do that. And secondly, okay, be sparing about when you do it. But every now and then do fucking put the boots in. Do just be like, well, you know, good riddance to bad trash. Peace.
Yeah. Yeah, you remember that fucking time that Dupree did that interview ahead of some tournament? And again, this is only a couple of years ago, and it definitely wouldn't fly now. But like when he pulled out that tube of like anal lubricant saying,
oh, we were at the tournament, Rich. It was before the final of, I think it was PGL Season 1, which was not the kickoff.
Yeah.
It was the one where they were playing VP, and him and Device had gone down the road in fucking wherever it was. Romania, because up from our hotel was like some sort of
sector. Yeah, that's right.
And they'd bought some lube. Yeah, they implied like you're going to do this. Joke being, we're going to anally rape you, but metaphorically. Yet we've also got a literal prop.
Yeah, and they went to all that trouble.
They also didn't think that one through.
No.
Remember what Pasha and people like that have been like and how sometimes they misunderstand jokes. Fucking hell, imagine if they'd have tried bantering back.
that would have been really
so many ways for everyone.
Well, and also imagine if that was the straw that broke the fucking camel's back in Pasha's mind as well. I wouldn't want to have been there for that either. But anyway, like, I remember
the straw that broke Device's back.
I remember watching that at the time, thinking to myself, like, fucking hell, lads! Like, what is this as a concept for an interview? What? Yeah, like, again, it's like, you do know we put... What's that?
Who wants to it? There's no finesse.
Well, yeah, you're right. But, I mean, it's like, we are playing Counter-Strike. We are playing video games. It's not fucking Oz. Like, what is going on here? But, like, I remember watching that and thinking, well, probably it's not what I would have done. Probably not what I would have liked my players to do if I was the manager of the organization. I suppose maybe we just let that one fall by the wayside. No big deal. But I remember the fucking community creating threads about it going, well, this trash talk has gone, because obviously it's a fan favorite team they've dissed as well, which always ramps up the morality factor of it. Saying, oh, you've dissed Virtus Pro, implying that about Virtus Pro. Family men like that, like as if there was some sort of weird, fucked up, sinister angle to it. Like, it's like, it was just banter. And like now I think players are like really fucking worried because they look over at other esports and like how policed they are. And CS is still like the Wild West. Like, you talk to any League of Legends player, you talk to any Dota player, you talk to any Overwatch player, they all say, man, I wish I was a Counter-Strike pro. You motherfuckers are rock and roll. You get to do whatever the fuck you want to do over there, you know? But I think a lot of the pro players now are like, I want to say you're shit, but... Well, it's 2 days of death threats. I can't. 2 days of community outrage. I don't know if I can deal with that. And we've lost a little bit of the fire in the scene as a result. Obviously, again, just for the purposes of the podcast, because I know people will be going, so Richard, you're saying you advocate for violence. Don't advocate for violence. I've said the exact opposite of that multiple times. But I like that there's always that bit of spice. Like, I wouldn't even have an issue if after a game, people refuse to shake hands and maybe, like, fuck off or whatever. I think that's still, like, you don't always shake hands when you play sports. I remember when I was a rugby player, you know, at the end of a rugby game, Duncan, I'm sure you played it, at some point, you have to make the tunnel. And the concept of the tunnel is, you know, you run ahead of the home team if you're the away team, and you stand opposite sides, sure, your full squad and your managers, and you applaud like this while the team you've just played walks through. They get through your tunnel, and they do the same for you, and you go and have a shower, and then you all go have a beer after the game. And the purpose of that is to say, we may have been punching each other in the face on the field, but once we get off the field, we're all mates, we'll all have a drink, we'll all sing some songs, and that's what makes rugby great. But I played in some vicious fucking amateur rugby games. I played in a game where a guy got his eye fucking gouged out. I played in a fucking game where someone nearly had their neck broke because he was like dipping to get to the try line, and instead of tackling him, they just ran in and uppercut him and nearly lifted his fucking head off. And he was in a fucking neck brace for ages, right? Not every game you play a rugby is going to end with all handshakes and laughs and smiles and going down that tunnel. I've seen people punched in the tunnel because of shit you do on the field. Certain games have certain spice to it. And it's like I say, not all games need to end with a handshake and GG. And it's an unrealistic expectation to have that in sports, by the way. That, or, you know, hey, it's esports. We all love games. Yeah, I love games. I don't love that motherfucker who's just beat me fucking 10 times in a row and has been a super cocky twat about it on Twitter all the time and saying I'm dog shit. I actually don't want to shake his hand. I respect him as a competitor, but that's where it ends. And I think this whole, like, you know, come by our bullshit, I don't know. I'm glad CS doesn't have it, I guess, is the whole purpose of this fucking segment. Yeah, have any final thoughts?
No, yeah, generally I agree. Like, the problem with that as well is in Counter-Strike, because there isn't such a physical component, that's also the problem. People would probably think this is like counterintuitive, that on the one hand we're saying we don't really want violence, but we want more trash talk. There wouldn't be that much overlap in that sense. The point here is people have censored themselves so much, they're not saying just the basic things they actually think. Like, I've actually thought some of the stuff this year has been quite cool, where at least the Danish teams are all talking shit to each other. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but even people like Zodic, who's a fucking chill as fuck guy, because of that whole thing with Kirby, what he purposely did was when Heroic had like a half decent result, he was saying like, yeah, well, congrats to Heroic. I think the second best team in Denmark, you know, like even putting little digs in like that to the North guys, you know, so I like that. Right? That's cool. You know, the whole point is you don't, not even trash talk's not all going to go straight for the jugular. You know, some of it's going to just be just a little bit of shit talk. I think you're overrated or something. You know, it's not all going to literally be like, fuck you and everyone in your team as a record label and a crew or whatever, is it?
Yeah, so that's it. I mean, I'm all for the licks and I'm all for the spice and I'm all for not getting along, but like, obviously don't punch each other. It makes us all look stupid, and you know, it's not a good look for esports. So look, couple of news stories to get into and then we can wrap up. I'm gonna say
for us as well, to be fair, it's never gone that bad in esports, at least. Like, we've never had someone just straight rear ice a motherfucker, have we? Like,
no, I can't remember an act. It's generally handbags. Like, I've never seen anything too fucking bad, but of course still no excuse for it, you know. So anyway Enter, I never pronounced them properly.
Enter, I think.
It's a soft C, is it?
I think so.
All right, Enter. That's how I've been saying it, just in case it's not okay. Enter have announced that they're back to Counter-Strike, and Arlu is their sort of marquee signing that's, you know, come into the team. And, you know, I don't really know what to make of Arlu. Now, obviously, it's a big week for Enter, the Finnish organization. Historically, Finns, again, another country that's made an outstanding contribution to Counter-Strike at various points, have had incredibly good teams and players that have, how should we say, value. You know, they were desirable to play in even, like, foreign lineups. So it's weird that they've never had, like, an amazing or very good team even in CSGO. But Arlu was kind of like that standout player. He did play on championship winning teams. He has been involved in, you know, NIP and FaZe and is considered a very good AWPer. But I just don't know what to make of Arlu. It's like he loves fucking Finland so much that it's like really stunted his ambition for me. Because this is a player, I think, right now, NA is screaming out for, like, you know, a better quality of AWPer than they have, let's say. I think you could, I think, like, and he had that opportunity, you know, he had those talks with Liquid way back when, turned it down because he doesn't want to live in NA.
I mean, logically, why is he not just in the current Optic lineup, the team he was fucking playing for, instead of Shazam?
Well, right, you know, I mean, it just seems crazy to me that he is, like, content, like, he's still only 25, you know, it's not, like, old in the current CS landscape by any stretch, and he's playing with a Finnish team that you're probably not going to see at a lot of top tier events, honestly, which just seems to me like such a waste of his talent because he is a talented player. He's not the best AWPer. He's not the most consistent AWPer, but you know, whichever Finnish players they get to play alongside him, and it is going to be an all Finnish lineup because that's intimated. They announced the strategic partnership with the Laden Pelicans. So, I have no idea if that's a good hockey team or not because I don't give a fuck about hockey. Yeah, they've intimated it's going to be an all-Finnish lineup. Well, you know, the other brilliant Finnish player is obviously Sonny, and he's not
going
to be
not going there, so.
Yeah, and then, you know, the rest of them, it's kind of like meh. So I don't know, dude. I just think it's kind of sad for me. Like, I hope they, again, be great to be proven wrong and see Finnish CS come back strong and Alu do well for himself because he's a fucking legendary guy, like such a cool dude. But I don't know, man. He just seems like to not have the ambitious drive. Very much like a Twist in that sense. Like, you know, he could be playing on much better teams than he does, and I don't get why he doesn't want to do that. I think, like, he's one of the players who gets to 30, 32, hangs up the mouse and is like, oh, yeah, fuck. Like, I could have had a ton of money. I could have not worked again. Now, you know, it's you know, back to the fucking job office on Monday or whatever to look for someone to do. So, what do you think?
This team and this period in Alu's career will either be known as Alu's sabbatical or Alu's retirement. That's it. Like, this team is either just a stopgap where you didn't want to play in NA and therefore you didn't have time to get on EU teams because, remember, it's not just majors now, EPL, ECS, the roster looks matter. These teams have to make their minds up pretty quickly. So you either missed the window and decided, right, rather than just sit out and do nothing, I'll play for this Finnish team, you know, and then see how it goes in a year or something. Or this is just you decided to collect one last nice paycheck before you hang it up and go do something else with your life. I mean, I will say I agree with you on that one. Alu is quite a weird guy, and as much as there's times when he's on top teams, like NIP, like this FaZe team he was on, where he is motivated and he does want to do really well, yeah, and he thinks he can be in the best team, but he's also the guy where, this is why I think his career has gone this way, where when he gets into a scenario where he's on like the lesser team, he's not really the guy who like just hard carries on those teams. And I think part of the reason why is he's another player who has that problem of like, there's certain people he wants to play with where if you ask him the reason why, it's generally about like what he wants in a teammate and what they're like as people and the feeling he gets playing with them. It's not like he can do this in the game and we'll win because of this and these. It's none of the reasons you want to hear from like a competitor, really. And this is one of those areas where I don't know if this will always be the case. This is one of those things I feel like might get ironed out of esports as it gets bigger and there's more money and there's more people trying to compete, is this whole aspect of like people sort of settling. I mean, it's really weird. I don't really see it happening in sports that much. The only scenario I can think of in sports where this happens is when someone like, you know, made their whole name with one club. And so they're so beloved there. They think, what would the point in going elsewhere? But, you know, I've set my whole legacy here. I've got to hope this team gets better or just leave it at that. Or, you know, they won a championship years ago. So they stick around too long, you know, 5 years too long, and they're never going to win. But they think, nah, maybe it can happen. Aside from that, you don't really get it in pro sports where players are like, I could go to better teams or I could do something better, but I'll keep playing. That's because this is the weird part. It's the fact you keep playing. You still have to put in all the hours. You still have to go to the fucking tournaments. You still have to play online matches. You don't have much of a life, but you're not really sort of getting the upside of it from our money. Like, I'd rather be doing it and always be going for broke. And either if I, and the day, in fact, I would even say this, the day I don't feel like that is the day I'd be like, time to hang it up, I reckon. You know, I'm not into it anymore. So I've always been puzzled by players who have this sort of wavering motivation.
Yeah, and like I say, you know, we don't know who he's playing with yet, so it's impossible to get.
It can't be that good, though, because as you say, basically any Finnish team that doesn't have Sonny in it, it's not really going to be relevant. Like, on the principle, he'll barely ever be mentioned on this show again.
Yeah, and it's a fucking shame, because, like I say, he's better than this level. But you know what? Fuck it, maybe we're missing a trick. Maybe he's making mad bank, gets to stay at home, like zero expectations. I guess for some people that is success, right?
Yeah, but that's also, okay, I'll give you an example. I'll relate it to my own life at the moment. So one of the problems I've had over the last like year to 6 months is that there's a part of me when I go to big events now, especially because so many of them are fucking 7 and 8 days long now. Like that, what I always actually liked about the 3 day event is it didn't matter that you work 15 hours a day because it's still only 3 days. You come home, you get a day's sleep and you're back to work. When you come home from one of those 8 day events, you need half a week, mate. I'm not kidding, to like decompress, to learn how to sleep again, to get eat proper food, you know, like you feel utterly wrecked. It's like you've done a fucking tour at war or something. You come home, it takes a while to integrate again. So when I do enough of these events, there's a part of me thinks like, right, I've got to only do the biggest events now. Like I should only say yes to a major or to like ESL One or to like fucking DreamHack Masters. I shouldn't do these other ones, you know, like they're not going to be remembered as the best tournaments ever. You know, some of them are even like sort of disposable tournaments now where it's like, oh, look, there's these two good teams and then this one's sort of decent and then these ones are okay. And maybe this team from China can show some, we never, you know, you're already starting to have a sort of make excuses to why it's half decent. But the problem is the reason why I still do a whole bunch of these events is because the amount you can make goes up and up every year. So there's a part of me always thinks, wouldn't it be a bit silly if in 2 years from now, for example, maybe they wouldn't even invite me anymore. Maybe there wouldn't even be massive events for CS anymore. And then in 2 years, I think to myself, well, I've had enough rest now. I could do, oh, there are no events anymore. And at the time, I could have been making ridiculous money, bearing in mind in talking about the early days when we used to do it for like a fifth as much, basically. And what, you know, I didn't make hay while the sun was out, as it were. Like I just thought, nah, I'll take my break now. So as a result, one of the reasons I don't is just because it's like I can have that rest in 2 years, mate. I can have in 3 years or something. I can have where I just don't do any events anymore, and that period of my life's over. But for now, while I'm in the prime position to get the best events and make the top dollar, why wouldn't I? So in the same scenario, I feel like a lot of these players are going to run into what happens to pro athletes, where there's a lot of them. Some of them retire not from injury because they actually just go, nah, it's time to retire, you know. And what a lot of them realize is, even if you weren't going to be your best in those last 2 years, you can never get those 2 years back. If 10 years from now, it doesn't matter when you're 45, like you're not going to come back as a pro. That's it. You should have just gritted it and gone through the last 2 years just so then you could sort of have a conscience and be like, well, I know there was nothing left at that point, you know, I gave it the maximum chance and you made the best living you could. Because I have to say, Alu's another one of those people where unless he's got some secret life that I have not known anything about, he's a bit like when I hear about Kenny S not having motivation. These are not guys who are going to instead, okay, so I'll give you, here's the best analogy, because I guess he's finished as well, right? So a lot of people wondered why Lurpis left doing events and went and became investment banker, right? Because obviously it's a boring as fuck job. Why would you want to do that? But one of the reasons why is, especially back then, you could make so much more money. And for the same amount, well, more work, but, you know, for literally for also dedicating your life, yet the rewards were way better. Well, the difference is Lurpa's actually at least had an out to go do something like that. People like Alu, people like Kenny S, I'm sorry to tell you guys, they're not going to go and get a mega real life job where they make anywhere as much or have anywhere near the sort of like, you know, satisfaction of like being a champion or the best in the world. They're just going to go and get an ordinary job. Like some of these people I know in esports, when CS 1.6 ended, they went and worked as a fucking mechanic, or they worked as a day laborer, or they worked in an office. And all of them, when they got a chance to come back to CS in any capacity, player, coach, part of an organization, they were all like, thank God I'm back. Like, I didn't realize until I'd gone, like, this actually means something. There's a potential RP in this.
Man. Same one, went to be a mechanic for 2 fucking years. And, you know, like, didn't think there was any going to be any stock in CSGO. Wasn't worth the headache. Playing with a young...
Not wrong at the time, necessarily,
yeah,
no, either.
No, definitely not. Like, you got to think about yourself. I've talked about that on a video I put up in my channel. But yeah, you know, it's like... I don't know. I guess it just depends what motivates you. If the perfect scenario for you is never having to try too hard, never having to stress yourself out, and just being comfortable, then I guess, yeah, fine. Shit like this works, but... If you strive for excellence and you strive to be the best, I don't know. I think this is a bit of a weak move, and I definitely think Alu could even, as I said, make more money and be playing at a higher level than he certainly is by holding onto this team. But anyway, here's the final story. We saved the best to last. G2, Duncan. It happened again. The Frenchies are at it again. They have had a meltdown, I guess, for want of a better phrase. Lots going on with this story. So I'll try and break it down into its constituent parts quickly as a summary. So it turned out that after G2 had another disappointing performance at another tournament, this one being Katowice, they decided that changes had to be made. Now, Ocelot as well said, trust in the process. I think he watched our episode of By the Numbers where we talked about some of those changes, honestly. I know Carlos is a big fan of us both. And I'm pretty sure he watched it. And I'm not saying we made up his mind for him, but, you know, people do sometimes listen to us. And anyway, the plan was to have NBK become the in-game leader. Now, unfortunately, there are two people in the French scene that have never really seen eye to eye on a lot of things. And that is Shox and NBK. They have very different philosophies on the game. They're very different. Yeah. They're very different personalities. And I've talked about this before, and I know Richard will not mind me saying it. You know, Shox has always said that he feels that there are some people in France, NBK being one of them, who are like robots. He doesn't consider them to have like what he thinks of as real emotions, that they don't play the game with their heart. They don't play it like to express themselves almost like artistically. Because if you know Shox like I know Shox, this is a guy who really is about, you know, women, wine, song. He writes poetry. He is a super interesting dude if you ever want to get to know him. And there's a lot more going on beneath the surface than people probably give him credit for. But he does have a very, you know, almost libertine-esque approach to anything he does. He wants it to be enjoyable. He wants it to be flamboyant. He wants it to be an expression of himself. NBK.
He is a bit naive in that sense, though, isn't he?
Because,
like, here's the thing. I've always said this, Rich. He's the ultimate example of, like he's not doing it as outrageous as this will sound, but like the bad kid that leads the kid who's sort of like borderline astray. That's why I always used to wreck Smiths, because I used to be like, yeah, your mates with Shox who can fuck around and not try and just half practice and do whatever he wants in the game. But you can't do that. You're Smiths. You can't do that. Like, if he leads you into that life, you're going to be the one that suffers for it, mate. And you can't at the end of it go, well, Shox wasn't practicing. Yeah, and he carried the game, didn't he? What did you do? You know, so unfortunately, Shox has always been a bit. This is why I've always thought as an in-game leader, it never made sense to me, because he's the ultimate guy who only understands the world of being the star player.
Yeah, and listen,
Whereas NBK is the opposite, isn't he?
Yeah, like I've always said, like the defining Shox quote for me, and it's like I almost like, no, I do respect him for it. If this is your mindset, it might limit you, but if you stick to your guns on it, fine. He's always maintained he would rather have like a playing career of like second places, third places, seventh to eighth finishes, as long as he was doing it with friends and people he cared about and people he enjoyed spending his time with in and out of the game, than if he was playing in a team where he didn't like his teammates but they were winning everything. The first means way more to him, which is why him and Smiths have been bros since fucking forever. Like, going back to Counter-Strike Source, they would always buddy up and play on teams together. And it was, and funnily enough, way back when, it was Smiths that was advocating to get Shox into very games in Source, when people didn't want to play with Shox, if you can believe that, even though he was still fucking amazing. So when this team came together, I was like, this is cool. They've really put all that bullshit behind them. But apparently this was a bridge too far. NBK being the leader of the team, in other words, telling Shox what to do, Shox said, nah, I can't live with that. Now, it's also been intimated Shox wanted to change the roster. I wonder what he suggested with Smiths, the coach, waiting in the wings. Please, I hope that didn't happen.
Who has now told us he wants to play again?
Yeah,
coincidence?
I know, right? Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly right. I'm reading between the lines here. The French guys haven't told me shit on this, and that's fair enough. So I'm not talking out of school. But it seems to me, I think Shox was trying to get Smiths back in the team, maybe, or certainly just flat out objected to NBK being the in-game leader. And then as a result, Shox went, well, no, I can't do this. I'm out. And Smiths left as well. Although apparently he was benched before he left. So they have now brought in Mixwell.
Didn't they also say technically, though, Rich, that he is still on the bench? That was the detail. I don't know if you saw that. I think Ocelot implied that he is keeping Shox on the bench technically, and that this lineup is sort of going to be a trial. And if this lineup fails, he might let Shox enact his vision of what he wanted.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been floated, but my understanding... Yeah, I think that's nonsense. I think that's a way of saying just that, you know, hey, nothing's definite. It's the safety net, isn't it? Because this is a pretty radical move. What you are doing is you are backing NBK, who, by the way, I love Shox, known him many years, known NBK ever since he's been a pro. I love them both. It's always blown my mind, really, that they were never able to sort of click, you know, but I suppose they are just too different. But, you know, NBK is definitely the right player back in this situation. This is the guy who literally will always bleed for the cause. Like, what's that? You need me to just stand here with a flashbang out and I will get bodied every time, but we will win the round. All right, then. You want me to play ultra passive and, you know, like... He is capable of being a star player. People always point to his statistics and go, Richard, that's just not true. Whenever he needs to step up, he's generally there or thereabouts. Unfortunately, this team was just so broken in terms of vision and structure. It never got off the ground. I didn't put any stock in Smith's coaching at all. I think he was there to placate Shox and make him feel a bit more at home in a team that he always swore he'd never play in. So... MBK is the guy at back. Now, MBK is undoubtedly smart enough to be an in-game leader. I don't know why he hasn't done it more in his career, but this is where it starts to get problematic. Obviously, we know there's certain other players that won't want to play in this team, and we know that there's some roads that they've already traveled down that they're not going to go back to. So they've had to bring in Mixwell. And I like Mixwell. I think Mixwell's a great... Well, not great. That's overselling it. But, you know, I think he's a solid hybrid AWPer that certainly gives them extra tactical options. But he ain't a fucking replacement for Shox. Real talk. And Shox has been playing with an injury, and I'd still be taking an injured Shox over a Mixwell. So this is a strange one for me. I don't know what you made of the whole situation.
Yeah, the tough part about this is that, again, you can't always just judge on who the better player is, because if this is a scenario where we're picking the better player, obviously I'd pick Shox all day and all night. I think Shox is actually one of the best. Like, when people say, like, legend, best player, they apply that to too many players. This is literally, like, one of the five best people to probably ever play any version of Counter-Strike. That's not even overselling it. And what I've always stressed is his unique quality, I think, compared to any other great player, is that when you go down the list of, like, people who were the best player in the world, this is the only one I'm aware of who was the best player in the world but then was taking like years off and can still keep doing it. Like, you've seen his recent form. He could probably, if he built the whole team around himself again, I bet he could be the best player in the world again in 2018 after he was the best player in the world in 2013. You know how ridiculous that is, half a decade ago. And this is when he already had a source career behind him where he did things there. So the guy's talent level is unbelievable, which is part of why, unfortunately, in the classic fashion, he's become one of these people who never fully applied himself and never had that cold zero grinding mentality where you just put in the 12 hours a day. And if you lose, that motivates you 10 times more win the next tournament. He's not that guy, unfortunately. And so what happens is, when he's got his motivation and when he feels like being the star, then he'll work himself into shape and he'll be the star. And when he doesn't, he doesn't. And there's been players like that in real sports. I mean, supposedly the original Ronaldo was like that, just fucked around, just didn't apply himself, never trained properly. But when he wanted to, still fucking amazing player. The problem with this is, on paper, yeah, you should definitely keep Shox, because odds are, again, one day he will be one of the best players in the world. But how can I take my team down a path that is a dead end, is a cul-de-sac? Like, that's the thing. If you're the manager of a team, if you're the general manager, you're the owner of a team, you should always be building so that you give yourself an option for the next roster move. Like, never make a final roster. There always has to be one where, even if this doesn't work out, right, I could bring in this other piece that could maybe elevate us, or I could change another aspect. The problem with the Shox one is, because he apparently just wouldn't give up being in-game leader and had no interest in bringing another in-game leader in, whether that be Existence or Happy or whoever it might be, get KRL back or something. Apparently he's playing again. Whoever it would be,
he's back.
He was not willing to do it. He wanted to be the guy who was the in-game leader. And that just didn't work. Like, there's only one time Shox was the in-game leader that ever looked good to me, which is when he just was in that team with Scream, and he was the in-game leader, but he's also the star player of the team. So that doesn't even particularly bode well for you as an in-game leader, because that's sort of like saying, right, you guys do these sorts of things and I can still shoot everyone in the head. Like, that's not in-game leading at that point in time. It's cool if you want to see a star player go off, but it's not in-game leading. So I have to say, with this team, I think the results are very underwhelming for the talent level they had. With that said, my big problem with it is, I don't think that the NBK one necessarily solves the problem, because NBK has twice in Counter-Strike become the in-game leader. When they did that first French shuffle, the one of the reasons they did it was so that NBK could become the in-game leader of that team. And he was going to, he'd left existence, thought that didn't work anymore. He was going to be the in-game leader. People forget this. Happy was the third option. They made Happy the in-game leader after NBK did it for a week, quit. Shox did it for a week, quit after they lost that tournament to Fnatic and Titan. And then after that, they were like, oh, this Happy guy did it before. I guess he can give it a go. And they just gave him a go. And guess what? That's what won him all those fucking majors, but they never would have gone down that path. Then in the Envious team in 2016, when it was really, really going badly, NBK officially at least said, I've become the in-game leader, we're going to do things more my way, you know, and I'm going to work with NKJ and we're going to have all these analysis. And it didn't particularly improve results, nothing much changed, and he quit being in-game leader after, as far as I know, and that one maybe after a month or two. So I agree. I think in terms of personality and his mindset for the game, he's a clear-cut example of someone who probably should literally decide, I'm just an in-game leader till the end of time now. And I'm committed to it. I'll put all my hours into it. I'll never again try to be a star player. But unfortunately, the fact he constantly quit in the past worries me in this scenario, because it feels like he just does it when it's like the last thing you can try. And then, like a lot of people who do it in those scenarios where they don't really want to commit, they just wait until it goes bad enough that they go, why am I the in-game leader anyway? This is bullshit. You know, we've had all these other problems and now this is not working. Like, get someone else. So to me, I actually think the Mixwell one at least makes sense, because you want someone who's definitely open to doing different roles in the team and who's got a good mentality as a team player, which by all accounts Mixwell has. The problem I see about this team is, though, you've lost the firepower of Shox, who was coming back online. And now, not only do you need NBK to stick with it, because there's nobody else in this team can be the in-game leader, I'm telling you that now. But beyond that, you also need the entire complexion of the team to change. Like, this can't be like old G2, but now it's just NBK's the leader and we've got Mixwell. This has to be like, I would even say they have to go the other way. They probably have to become quite a tactical team, go down what the Fnatic route is. You've got some good players, but you've basically only got one big hitter, which is Kenny S. You've got to get Kenny S. You've probably got to build the team around how he plays. You've got to have Apex do his role. You've got to figure out a good role for Mixwell. I think you've got to do something about Body, because that guy's been missing for a long time. He's done fuck all in the games I've watched. He looked like dead weight for a long time. But as far as I can tell, he's got a good personality, so I guess he's never caused any problems. But I think if they ever want this team to be anywhere close to what the potential of the old lineup was, they've got to massively rehaul, because I feel so robbed by that last G2 lineup. Because whole hype was,
we all Kenny waited Kenny S and Shox together, yeah.
I've never got it. Never. It was bullshit, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, like the fucking Hobbit.
Fair play to Ocelot, though. At least he did actually do a drastic move and allowed them to do something different. So give it a try.
Yeah, yeah, and definitely. I'll reserve judgment on this one, even though I've got my doubts. I mean, who knows? Sometimes these French players, they are like temperamental historically, and you know, they get a lift when that sort of like toxic element is removed, and sometimes they go on a tear. Usually when a French revolution, as we call them, happens, you know, it usually leads to that team certainly being much better, if not being the best team in the world, which I don't think it'll happen this time, but who fucking knows. So anyway, there we have it, I guess. That's by the numbers. This show on YouTube will be criminally short, no doubt, once we cut out fucking all the random shit and realize we probably shouldn't try and spin esports aggression or whatever, but fuck it, we keep it real when we stream it live. So thanks to everybody for tuning in, and of course thanks to the people that make it possible, our lovely patrons. So these are our $100 top tier patrons: Detlaf, Insomniac, Dr. Skrilla and Mr. Gay Icon, Chris Enwin, Hyolu, Mateus Pietkowski, Jerky's Minion. In our $50 patrons, we have Sard Sawar, Daniel Plamenov Yordanov, Nastradamus, Marcus Kyunpar, Mama Jama Hennessy, Keith Miller, Carl Oscar Garcia Firm, Benakagi Assassin, and William Southern. A deep and heartfelt thanks to you all. Thanks to Sam for pressing the buttons and editing this VOD so we get to do it again next week. Thanks to Duncan for coming here and giving us something to timestamp out of the podcast. And we will see you next week on By the Numbers. Until then, take care of yourselves.